Izzy.
Wake up.
What? Stop hitting me.
Come on. Hop.
Oh, where are we?
We're about to cross over into Germany.
Oh, God. How long have I been out?
Yeah, quite a long time, actually. Basically, since we got off the ferry, you, I'll have you know, were supposed to be keeping me awake. I'm knackered.
Well, you seem to have managed.
Oh, yeah, right.
Plenty of inner monologues, I imagine.
Actually, no. But I did try to remember the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner and see how far I could get. That's what you drove me to.
Oh, God, I'm glad I was asleep. Well, how far did you get?
Well, the first verse was pretty good. And, it was downhill from there. Oh, and you missed a very, very good French petrol station stop. Superb café et croissant.
Well, you could have woken me up. I'm famished.
Well, you did look very, very peaceful. And in any case, after your bout of vomiting on the ferry, I thought perhaps your tummy could do with a little rest.
Oh, very selfless of you.
I thought so, yeah.
Well, my stomach has rested, and it's empty, and it's thus clamoring food.
Clamoring, is it? Mm. Yeah, that's very poetic of you. Well, I'll tell you what, if your tummy is as empty as our petrol tank, then it is definitely time to pull over.
So, are we in Germany?
Yes, I think we just went through the border area.
Oh, do you mean that bunch of closed huts we just passed?
Yeah, probably. Funny things, aren't they, borders? Particularly now that we're in the Schengen region. I'm not sure if I miss border controls or not.
I mean, if it means waiting for dodgy-looking caravans in front of you, then definitely don't miss them.
No, no.
Look, I need a loo as well.
Oh,
how far till we can stop?
Oh, we can stop anywhere for that. Come on, look. Plenty of grassy knolls around.
Orlando, I think I require more than just open spaces and absorbent grass.
You sound like a feminist sheep.
Orlando.
Okay, I'm sorry. Petrol station in 20 kilometres.
Oh, it's touch and go, speed up. Ah, that's better.
No sausage rolls here, no scotch eggs. Ah, farewell, good old British petrol stations.
Well, at least here you can buy fuel. Right, let's get that snack. My stomach needs good German bread, nothing like a good pretzel.
You're sounding distinctly glad to be back.
Well, I am German, and I do live here.
Yeah, that's a fair point, I suppose. I think even I feel a faint sort of tinge of positivity coming back over the border. I guess it must be a lack of Brexit.
Are you getting Brexit withdrawal symptoms?
Post-Brexit distance disorder.
PBDD.
No, it's good that. It's got a nice ring to it. Except, funny enough, I feel order and not disorder.
Well, it's because we're back in Germany.
And that's what that funny tingling sensation was coming back over the border.
Mm. Do we know any poems about borders?
You want more poems?
Mm.
Well, literally, we're just coming back from our poetry tour of Britain. I need time to recover.
Mm. You've got PTBPO.
You've got an acronym fetish. A fetonym.
Post-tour of Britain poetry overload.
Oh, God, that's more of a mouthful than your pretzel. This is pretty accurate when I come to think about it. I don't think I can stomach much more poetry.
Just a small one?
No, I couldn't. I'm stuffed.
But even if it's just Wefersin?
The only one I can think of is not Wefersin. It's The Night Mail by W.H. Auden.
Mm, as in, this is the night mail crossing the border.
Yeah, exactly. The very same. It's a bit more about the old British postal service than about borders, really.
Mm, well, how about this one? By Edward Lear. There was an old man on the border who lived in the utmost disorder. He danced with a cat and made tea in his hat, which vexed all the folks on the border.
Very good. Yeah, very funny. But he did use the word border twice, which kind of takes a little bit away, no. I think, from the quality.
Yeah, let's just get back in the car and keep going, right?
Yeah, well, I feel culturally replete. Yeah, why don't we do that?
Cool. Mm-hmm. Should we have a little limerick competition, though?
No, please not. Please not. As you say, let's just get moving.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. It's not long to go now, is it?
I hope not. I'm absolutely knackered.
You must have had about 15 coffees today.
Exactly, that's the problem. I think I've got CIDL.
Go on, explain.
Caffeine-induced driving lassitude.
Ooh, the list is growing. All right. Now, why don't we do a quiz to keep you awake?
I get the distinct impression we're doing another episode of the Poetry Pod.
We're just driving home and passing the time.
Hey, but hang on a minute. You've just read a poem, you've just suggested a limerick competition, and now we're going into a quiz I mean, that's more or less our classic episode structure.
You're just getting paranoid from all your psychological conditions. So, border quiz. Why don't you start?
You want me to start a border quiz?
Yes, absolutely.
While I'm driving?
Yeah.
Well, it's just luckily for you, I've got an incredible amount of general knowledge. So, yeah, no problem at all. Okay, all right. Let's try this for size and see what your geographical knowledge is. Shared borders. Right. With which countries does France share a border?
Ooh, do you mean mainland France or do you also mean overseas?
No. Mainland France.
All right,
mainland
so... France.
That's a good comeback there. I'm impressed.
I know France.
Okay, let's find out.
Right, so if you start at the top right corner, northeast, if you will, we've got Belgium. That's one.
I'm ticking these off my inner list. Yes,
right.
Carry on.
Then... I don't think they border on the Netherlands, because I think Belgium's just squeezed in between there.
Okay.
Or do they? No, because Belgium's got a coast. So.
Okay.
Right, so Belgium.
Belgium.
Luxembourg,
yes.
Then we've got Germany.
Germany.
Then we've got Switzerland.
Switzerland.
Then we've got Italy.
Italy.
Monaco.
Monaco, impressive.
Then Spain.
Spain.
And Andorra.
Impressive. And not the Netherlands?
Not the Netherlands.
Are you quite sure about that?
I'm fairly sure.
How sure are you?
Like 50%.
50%. Are you going to go with that? Are you going to stay with that answer? Do you want to phone a friend?
I want to phone a friend.
You can't phone a friend.
I can't phone a friend. I thought so.
I'm your friend.
You're the friend.
You can ask me.
Right, so does it share a border with the Netherlands?
No, it doesn't. You're absolutely right. Congratulations.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, very, very good. Very good. Right, it's your turn. You're going to ask me a question.
Right. Let me see. Right, now, this one.
Mm-hmm.
There is a country in Europe still who hasn't changed its borders
right.
in 25 years.
In 25 years, okay.
But It doesn't border on any of the countries that I bordered at 25 years ago. So all the neighboring countries have changed.
Uh-huh, okay.
Which country could that be?
And it's a European country?
European country.
It's a European country. And it's not an island?
It's not an island.
It's on mainland Europe?
Yeah.
Yeah? And all the other countries have changed?
Mm-hmm.
Changed borders?
Changed. If I asked you 25 years ago, what other neighboring countries
Okay. So I'm thinking Eastern Europe. Mm. And I'm thinking something like... that's a tricky one. I'm going to go... Is it in the Balkans?
No.
Could it be something like... Well, it can't be Slovenia, because you've got Italy. It can't be Slovakia, because you've got Hungary. Could it be Hungary?
No.
Close to Hungary.
Close.
Do you know where it is?
I know where it is.
Is it the Czech Republic?
Almost. Very closer.
Not Slovakia, is it?
Not Slovakia.
Poland? No.
It is Poland.
Poland?
Yeah. Because it was Eastern Germany.
Ah, yeah.
And then you had Czechoslovakia to the south. And
true.
Then you had the Soviet Union to the east.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, I'm going to ask you one more question, but only one. Which European country, and you have to think in a broader perspective when I say European, which European country has the most borders?
Oh, European as in...
As in, let's say, geographical rather than political.
Yeah. Well, I imagine that one would be Russia, because it is very big.
Correct, and for a bonus point, I mean, not that we're, you know, counting, but for a bonus point, how many borders do you think that would be? To within two or three countries?
17.
It's alarmingly close.
Ooh.
I'm not going to ask you to name them, although we do have time, because we're still a long, long way away from home. 16.
16, ooh.
Have you been studying?
No, that was just...
How did you know we were going to do this quiz? It's really uncanny, actually.
Well, you know, I like quizzes.
Yeah, I know. Well, that I know, as do I. Go on then. So you're doing pretty well.
Right.
I'm not doing so well.
Right, let's do a true or false question.
Okay, go on. Right. I'm all ears.
So, in 2012,
yes,
the acrobat Nick Wallander crossed the Niagara Falls on a tightrope.
Okay.
True or false, did he have to show his passport when he reached Canada?
Well, it's such a crazy... it's either a trick question or it must be true. So my thinking is, I reckon it's a trick question. Did he remain in the same country while crossing the falls? No. Okay, so he did get over.
He did cross.
Okay, fine. Then I'm going to say he did have to show his passport.
He did indeed.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Did he have to show it after he got off the tightrope or while he was still on the tightrope?
No, as he got off. Okay. Because they didn't send, that would have been hilarious.
That would have been.
If they just like sent Border Patrol that on the tightrope.
That would have been really, really tough. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said that, you know, the whole process leading up to the tightrope walk was a lot more impressive than the actual walk. He said it was like getting all the authorities to agree was the amazing feat.
That was the tightrope walk.
The walk was just...
political tightrope walk, yeah. Speaking of tightrope walks and borders, we are getting pretty close to France.
Ooh. So, you don't live too far from here, do you?
No, I do not.
It must be cool,
I do not.
Living so close to the border.
Actually, our village is literally right on the French border.
Ooh, amazing. That must be great. You know, you've got probably got all the wine and cheese you can require.
Yeah, literally, we hop over the border and there we have a sort of plethora of cheese, wine, vats of wine. No, it's not quite like that, but yeah, it is nice. It is very nice. We've got a nice little town near us called Wissembourg and... Yeah, when life gets a bit dull and predictable in Germany, we just nip over the border, buy some organic cheese, some wine. There's a very good shop which sells organic poultry. We go there as well. Yeah, and things are different over there, you know. Things are different. Well, you've been to France, is he? Come on.
Yeah, on holidays.
You know what it's like.
Yeah, but, you know, I always go there on holidays, so it doesn't really feel like, you know...
I know what you mean.
It's not the same as like a different mindset.
It is a bit weird because, I mean, you get used to it after a while. You get used to, I mean, it's also my commuting route. So I drive over the French border and you get used to the changes, but it's also cool at the same time. So you do kind of enjoy. It's like a sort of breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. It's nice. The accent changes, the whole mentality changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of nice. I'm getting close to France now. I feel in the mood. I know a very good poem by Samuel Taylor Coleridge because, you know, I was in Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner mode. And it's called France, an Ode. Ye clouds that far above me float and pause, whose pathless march no mortal may control. Ye ocean waves that wheresoe'er ye roll yield homage only to eternal laws. Ye woods that listen to the night bird singing, midway the smooth and perilous slope reclined, save when your own imperious branches swinging have made a solemn music of the wind, where, like a man beloved of God through glooms which never woodman trod, how oft, pursuing fancies holy, my moonlight way o'er flowering weeds I wound, inspired, beyond the guess of folly, by each rude shape and wild, unconquerable sound. O ye loud waves, and O ye forests high, and O ye clouds that far above me soared, thou rising sun, thou blue rejoicing sky, yea, everything that is and will be free, bear witness for me, wheresoe'er ye be, with what deep worship I have still adored the spirit of divinest liberty. I mean, if you didn't know that that was called France, an Ode, what would you think that was about?
I was going to say it sounded a bit generic. Could be Italy too, or Spain.
Could
you know,
be. Could be the Lake District, couldn't it?
Could be the Lake District. But then liberty, I guess, is a very important word.
It's the big clue, isn't it? Right, it's the big clue. And I suppose France, when you travel through France on the train, you've done that as well, haven't you? You sort of notice the big swathes of land where there is nothing. You know, it's not like these big built-up regions of like the Ruhr in Germany, or the sort of the industrial north of the UK, where it's all conurbated. In France, you've got big open spaces of like nothing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Even now, right?
Even now, yeah.
Quiz question, what's the population of France?
55?
You're very, very good, but you're always one out. I think it's 54. Now, you might be right, actually, 55.
It might be at this point, right?
Yeah,
it might be
yeah.
50, 55
might have
now.
Increased yeah. slightly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So obviously this is the Alsace region,
yeah.
right? Which yeah. has been like bouncing back and forth between Germany and
like
France.
A tennis ball.
Like a tennis
yeah.
ball.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what would you say? How French is it, or how?
That's a tricky question to answer, really, because I mean they. I think they're sort of in a kind of cultural no man's land, really. It's hard to say. I mean, they speak an interesting dialect, which is sort of French and German, and sounds a little bit like the dialect where we live in Germany. It's hard to say. I think it's got the best of both worlds. But I'll tell you what I could do, because I actually know a bit about our region.
Yeah.
Shall I boil it down into a 2-minute history?
Can you? All right. I'm going to time it, though. I'm going to time it.
You're going to time it?
Okay. Get my timer out.
Reach across for your timer.
Okay,
I will try and switch my brain on.
Right.
Yeah.
Your brain. I switched on my timer. Okay.
Do I get any bonus points if I'm faster than 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
There's no chance of that happening. So
you don't
I'm
think so?
Happy.
Okay.
I'm happy to give you a bonus point.
Oh ye of little faith.
All right. Ready to go?
Yeah. Go on.
All right.
Hit the start button.
Go.
Okay. Well, basically, you know, there's a lot of wine in the Alsace region, yeah? So originally it was a Roman center of viticulture, so they built a lot of forts. And in about 400 AD, the Alemanni came along, and these are the people that kind of were responsible for the Swabian, the Swiss dialect, and they were very agricultural, so they were responsible for tilling the soil. And in about the 5th century, Clovis and the Franks came along and Christianized the whole area. And Lorraine was then born in 842, roughly, very rough date. Lorraine was founded, and then in 1648, so a long time afterwards, came the Treaty of Westphalia, where it was definitely recognized as being part of France. But interestingly enough, German was still spoken in schools. And in 1789, the French Revolution occurred, and this was when the two regions of Alsace, Haut-Rhin and Bas-Rhin, came into being. And basically in 1918, the Treaty of Versailles, this whole region basically went back to France. So it had been basically annexed to the German Empire by Bismarck in 1871 after the Franco-Prussian War. And then, of course, in 1940, during the German invasion of France, obviously it went back to Germany, became part of the German Reich, and they conscripted French soldiers into the German army. And these people in the Alsace region were called the Malgré nous, so in spite of us, basically. And 45, obviously, went back to France. And now the whole region, because it's not called Alsace-Lorraine anymore. Yes, it's Alsace, the little region that we're coming towards, but it's now the whole area. So we're talking about Lorraine, we're talking about Champagne, we're talking about Alsace. It's called Grand Est. But there are a lot of movements which encourage Alsatian to be spoken again, because there was a whole movement when it got subsumed back into France for them to speak only French or only German when they were in it. But now they want to embrace their dialect. So I'm going to stop there. I'm reckoning I was about 3.5 minutes. What were you saying?
2.5.
Oh, no, that was pretty good.
I was quite impressed that you reached 1945 by like minute.
Do you think I'm improving in terms of my... Yeah, I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And on the off the top of my head as well.
Yeah.
Actually, I tell you what, instead of just talking about it, we are so close. Why don't we just nip over the border and experience France ourselves?
Yeah. You mean now?
Yeah.
Now?
Oui, oui.
But, you know, we just came back from the UK.
I know.
And we're both knackered and hungry.
Oh, come on. It's not much of a detour. We're practically there. Look, I tell you what, we'll go there. We'll have some Flammkuchen, maybe talk to a couple of people.
Orlando, that's definitely another episode of the Poetry Pod.
Yeah, but you do want to go to France. You said it yourself.
You had me at Flammkuchen.
Ah, go on then.
All right. Well, Do you know Heinrich Heine?
Heinrich Heine, the German poet and writer.
That's the one. Yeah. He spent a lot of time, you know, going back and forth between Germany and France.
Okay.
Yeah, because he was a very political writer, but then he, you know, because of tribulations in this day and age, he had to move to Paris.
Okay, it's a hard life. Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah, I know having to.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. And he spent a lot of time, you know, trying to explain France to the Germans and Germany to the French.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's...
He was something of a European, wasn't he, Heine?
Yeah, very much. Yeah. So he, and he talked a lot about identity as well. So he was born in Germany, obviously, and then moved to France. And he was born as Harry Heine. That was his first name, was Harry.
Harry Heine.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of cool.
Very cool name.
Like a comedian.
Exactly, yeah, true, yeah. And then, but then, you know, to make him sound more serious, he was called Heinrich.
Okay.
But then he moved to France, so obviously he turned into Henri.
Henri Heine.
But then, you know, the French had a lot of trouble with the Heine part, so he, you know, they kind of shortened it to Henri-en. And then they just condensed it even further, and in the end, he was called Henri-en.
Henri-en.
A nothing.
A nothing. A rien.
A rien.
That's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like Odysseus.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah.
And he wrote a very short and fun poem where he compares Germany and France. Would you like to hear it?
I do, but do you have this off the top of your head?
I do.
Oh, fantastic. Kind of we're very knowledgeable, aren't we?
Library of Orient in my head.
Yeah. Go on then.
Right, so it's called Diesseits und Jenseits des Rheins.
Okay.
Sanftes Rasen, wildes Kosen, Tändeln mit den glühenden Rosen. Holde Lüge, süßer Dunst, die Veredlung roher Brunst, kurz der Liebe heitre Kunst, da seid Meister ihr, Franzosen. Aber wir verstehen uns bass, wir Germanen, auf den Hass. Aus Gemütes Tiefen quillt er, deutscher Hass, doch riesig schwillt er, und mit seinem Gifte füllt er schier das Heidelberger Fass.
So he's not overly positive about the Germans, is he?
Well, you know, he is. So obviously it's about, you know, the French are very good at all the emotional stuff, especially love. But he says, you know, the German quality is hatred.
Hatred,
they're
lovely.
They're very good at hating.
Very good at hating.
They're very, you know.
So this kind of tendency that the Germans have for sort of self-loathing and self-criticism was alive and well back in the times of the French Revolution.
True, yeah.
And in Heine's times as well.
Yeah.
That's interesting to know, isn't it? Because we always associate that with post-war German self-loathing, but actually, yeah.
True.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So he was comparing the two things and he traveled a lot. As a lot of poets did. We know Wordsworth obviously traveled. We know Friedrich Hölderlin also traveled over to Bordeaux. In the times of the French Revolution, a lot of poets were, they wanted to show their support until they found out how bloody it was. But I suppose that's also because the dialect that they speak around here, so we're in the Pfalz, the sort of the southern part of Germany, the Rhineland-Palatinate area, before we go into Alsace, and they always say hive und drive. So here and like what you said.
Yeah, these sides and the other side.
These sides
and
the
other side. And the other side.
This side and the other side, exactly. Hive und drive. Yeah, yeah.
It could be a great title for an episode of the Poetry Pod.
Were we to do one, which we're not.
Which we're obviously
not.
No.
Hey, this is actually perfect timing. Speaking of hive und drive, we are very close to the border. We are only, my calculations are correct, we're only 2 minutes away from my house.
Oh, that's great. Can we have a cup of tea at yours? I'm parched.
Of course we can.
Oh, nice. It'll be good to recharge. I need to summon up enough energy for the Flammkuchen.
Yeah, you are not wrong. The Alsatian Flammkuchen does require considerable energy. Mm. We should actually explain what a Flammkuchen is to our listeners.
If we had any listeners, you know.
Oh, that's a fair point, yeah.
We're not really doing an episode, are we?
I keep having to slap myself, of course. Thank God, actually. Thank God.
But
would you like me to explain what a Flammkuchen is to you?
No, I don't. I want you to buy me a Flammkuchen like we agreed to.
Well, basically, a Flammkuchen is an Alsatian pizza, but with a thinner crust. It originated...
Orlando.
What? Oh, sorry, I was explaining again. I've got so used to explaining, I just can't stop.
You've just given me a vision of hell.
Okay, well, we don't want that. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we surprise my family and have a little tea break?
Sounds great.
Hello? I'm home. I've got a surprise guest. Hello? Oh, okay. I think we're on our own. No one here.
That's a very nice house you have.
Thank you very much indeed.
It's very pretty.
Thank you. Yeah, we like it. How do you take your tea? English or German?
Oh, English, of course.
Good for you. Good for you. Okay, Earl Grey with milk. With
excellent. Excellent. So, do your family speak French?
Well, yes and no. Yeah, they do a little bit. My kids, my eldest daughter, she's learning. She's doing an ABI-BAC, so she's doing like A levels, and some of those classes she has in the French language.
Mm, right.
So not just French,
yeah,
but like geography or history, she'll do cool. In French.
Ooh.
Which kind of will give her a few more opportunities maybe, and nice. They have more exchange possibilities with French students. But having said that, there's not a lot of contact, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah.
True.
Yeah, but there we are.
Mm.
But you speak a bit of French as well, don't you?
Well, I'm very good at pretending to speak French.
Okay, and what is the secret behind this
The secret
wonderful gift?
Behind this is, well, I can understand enough French to know when to say yes and no.
Okay.
And then my friend from France told me this trick. The trick is to always have food or drink in your mouth.
Oh,
so okay. I'll just take the cup of tea.
Go on,
I go that mouth. And you say something in French, and I just reply with, mm.
All right. Quelle heure est-il? And you think that passes
and
for French?
Then you just emote.
You emote with a closed mouth.
Exactly. I mean, you can also do it without food, but it's easier to have food and drink, so we always have an excuse to, you know, just
so
not
basically, effectively,
say words.
When you're having a French conversation, you always need to do it in a restaurant or have food at your side to stuff in your mouth when somebody asks you a question.
Yeah, I mean, that's my image of France anyway. Okay. There's always food or drink in the vicinity.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth behind that,
right.
I suspect. Yeah.
Right, so is that hill over there? Is that France?
That is France.
That's
crazy. 400 meters away. It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I really like as a thought, you know. And in fact, there are, you know, talked about viticulture and Roman fortifications. Well, we have got four hill forts around our village, and that one over there is about 700 years old.
Ooh,
yeah. And in fact, there's one behind it, and there used to be a Minnesänger, a minstrel, Konrad von Hohenburg, who lived there.
Right.
Shall I explain to you what a Minnesänger was?
You mean a smart-ass explanation followed by a five-minute lecture?
That's not what a Minnesänger was, but yes, I'd like to do that.
Go ahead then. I mean, I know what a Minnesänger is, but
yeah, exactly.
I can't...
It's a knight who speaks of success on the battlefield or while hunting in song or poem form, and then tries to use it to chat up noble women.
Ooh, that was surprisingly short, and exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Would you like to hear one of Conrad's poems?
I doubt it, but, you know, go on anyway.
Okay, well, I'm going to put on my special, very old German accent in order to do this. Konrad von Hohenburg, Winters Kraft ist aber kommen. Winters Kraft ist aber kommen. Den kleinen Vogelin ist benommen. Ihr Gesang lang mag in wohl Sindus wäre zieht. Davon truret in der Müt, doch bin ich nicht von sehnerlicher Not behüt. Güt ist sie, du mir viel Sorgen gibt. Und ich ihr mit Willen gerne diene, zu Österreich ist viel Güt Sinn. Von Wiener wäre ich gerne hin, wieder an den Rhin, zu der schönen Dute es den König zieht. Did you like that, Izzy? Did you recognize the accent?
No, I have no idea what language that was. It sounded like you just made up a couple of words, like doot doot, toot boot.
It was an accent without borders. It's very, very modern European. Well, no, I mean, I did my best. It's probably not accurate, but it does kind of reflect, I don't know, you can hear elements of Swiss in there maybe.
Perhaps.
But it's perhaps not historically accurate.
But wasn't there Vienna in there as well? Didn't he talk about Wien?
Yeah, so what did you hear?
So, you know, Winterskraft is coming, so the power of winter has come. There was something about a Vogelein, so a little
bird. Yeah.
And then
du svære tid, you hard time.
Yeah. Mm. And then, you know, he's in Vienna. It's really cold and snowy, and you're in the mountains almost. Yeah. And then he wants to go back to the Rhine, the Rhineland, which is a lot less cold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he wants to come down from the mountains and come to the Rhineland, where the wine flows and the women are beautiful.
It did sound completely made up, though.
It wasn't. It's a historically accurate text. Actually, speaking of funny accents and local poets, I know somebody who lives very close to us, Jean-Yves Doucet. He's a Frenchman, and he lives in Vissembourg, you know, this little town round the corner, beautiful little sort of bijou town.
Oh, nice.
And this guy's a really interesting guy. So he's like, he's a poet, but he's also a fine artist. He also does silhouettes. He sometimes writes songs. He's quite a Renaissance man.
Very impressive.
Shall I give him a call?
I mean, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Do they do Flammkuchen in Vissembourg?
Oh, for goodness sake.
You promised me Flammkuchen.
Yeah, but, you know, we're talking about fine art and high art, and all you can think about is Flammkuchen, filling your stomach.
Cuisine is, it's culture, it is art, it is,
well, not,
you know,
Flammkuchen, local. Come on. Okay, I tell you what, we can do both. I'll give him a ring, all right?
Yeah, all right, let's get going then. So, we just heard Old German, obviously, but what does Alsatian sound like?
Well, funny enough, I know a couple of poems in Alsatian. I mean, obviously, being British, I do not speak Alsatian. But Alsatian, as I said before, sounds a little bit like this area that we live in, the Pfalz, the Palatinate. But I do know a couple of poems, and I can sort of get close to the accent.
Do you mean the Duden
Yeah. No, it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound like that. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll do one, because it's very short. This is from the Alsatian poet André Weckmann. Okay? And it's called Wesse Welle Meer. Wesse Welle Meer. André Weckmann. Wesse Welle Meer, was mehr sen gsen. Wesse Welle Meer, wer mehr sen. Erst nu können wir bestimmen, was wir wollen waren. So what did you make of that accent?
It sounded more authentic than Konrad von Hohenburg.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'll take that as a vague compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Well, so what I understood, but I don't speak the language, but so it's, we want to know what we are.
Yeah.
What we've been, where we've come from.
Yeah.
Want to know who we are.
Yeah.
And then the break is sort of now.
Yeah.
Only now can we decide.
Yeah.
What we've been, who we've been.
Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah.
Shaping the identity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, so Weckmann was a. He was born in a place called Zabern, Zabern in German, in Alsace. And yeah, in 43. He was one of these malgré nous, so one of these conscripts, and fought in Russia. And then he was wounded and sort of crossed over to the Force Française de l'Intérieur. And yeah, basically he then taught in Strasbourg after the war and became a really big figure in the Alsatian poetry scene. And he wrote a lot in the Alsatian dialect because he was, you know, part of the, he was a champion of the Alsatian dialect and of all of the problems that they had trying to, yeah, find their voice and to try and find out whether speaking Alsatian is something to be proud of or not.
Mm-hmm. I think that's always the big problem with dialects, right? And like you see it in Spain as well with Catalan or Welsh, you
absolutely
know, Scotch Gaelic, where, you know, it's the sort of the whoever is in power tries to suppress those languages.
Absolutely.
And like, kill off the identity.
Yeah, because it's a threat.
Because it's a threat.
It's
because people can communicate in a way that the authorities won't understand.
Yeah. Social control. Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you. I think in my rucksack over there, I think I've got another poem. I've got a selection of poems by a guy called Claude Vigée.
Right.
And this guy's another sort of hero of the Alsatian lyrical scene.
Mm-hmm.
Have a look in there. See if you can find
You've got an entire library in here.
No, I know. Just have a look at the bottom there.
Complete works of William Shakespeare.
Yeah,
what
no,
are we
not,
do with
obviously
that?
Not that. Well, that, obviously we had to have that for our England tour, didn't we?
Oh, yeah,
Claude Vigée, and you will find in there, yeah, in the compendium, there's a poem I've earmarked called Black Nettles Blaze in the Wind. It's a long poem.
Right.
And if you look at that, yeah, just there. There's a,
oh, yeah,
I've
yeah.
earmarked one section
yeah,
of
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And this poem's about, yeah, it's about the same thing. It's about sort of, how do we feel about our local dialect?
Claude Vigée, Black Nettles in the Wind, translated by Delphine Grasse. Since it erupted from our windpipes, as quickly as it had vanished, gulped down at the bottom of our wells, the forever silenced language of childhood. Why do we stand there like helpless beggars, all dazed and crooked, bare hands extending? All this life we dismissed it on the grounds of sickness, though slowly stifling ourselves as we stood away from it. Always this foolish air of panic, of being struck half dumb. Our hoarse voices, broken long ago, suddenly stopped. Already on our school bench, in the thrall of the forceps of language, we felt like tongue cripples tangled up in our songs.
I mean, that's really powerful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Really powerful stuff. Tongue cripples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Slowly stifling ourselves, sort of, you
yeah.
know, you're swallowing the words that
yeah.
you can't speak. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like sort of we want to speak, but we've been so suppressed that
mm-hmm.
it almost doesn't come out on its own. The sort of business of forceps, it's a nice image, isn't it? So Vigée, yeah, he was an interesting character. He was Jewish, and he was called, when he was born, he was called Claude Strauss, and he came from a village called Bischwiller, which is a bit further south from here, but it's in Alsace. And but he changed his name, so he became part of the French resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And he changed his name to Vigée. So V as in life,
mm-hmm.
and G as in I have.
Oh,
so it's like,
so
I
life,
have life.
I have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
And that was quite cool, yeah. So, and but this guy, in comparison to Weckmann, he was quite well traveled. So he got out of Germany, or of France, in 43, and went to the States.
Mm-hmm.
Got his doctorate, and then taught in universities, and German, and poetry. And then he went to Israel for a time, and then came back over in the sort of early 2000s to Paris. But he was also like an honorary member of Bischwiller, and yeah, as you can see from this poem, kind of championed the local language, as it were, you know. But you can tell it's not an easy thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big struggle with identity, I guess, you know, who gets to decide on what your culture is, what your language is.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean,
yeah.
the way that little places like you talked about Andorra when we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, the little principalities, Monaco. I mean, Alsace, for example, kicked around like a tennis ball or a football. You know, the Germans, for example, when it became part of the Prussian Empire, 1871, there was a politician, Heinrich von Treitschke, German nationalist. And, you know, and this sort of symbolizes what the Germans thought of the Alsatians, because they were just seen as this sort of under folk, under people, you know, just not really proper people. He said, "We Germans who know Germany and France know better what is good for the Alsatians than the unfortunates themselves. In the perversion of their French life, they have no exact idea of what concerns Germany."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty...
Yeah, it's
hard-hitting.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I mean, that's also the view, you know, lots of colonial powers had over there, all the colonial powers had
yeah.
over their colonies,
yeah.
right?
Because yeah.
you just go like, oh, we know what's best for
exactly.
everyone.
In their ivory tower
yeah.
looking down.
Yeah. yeah.
So the poor old Alsatians have had to cope mm-hmm. with this backwards and forwards,
yeah.
backwards and forwards. So it's not really surprising that we've had a lot of peace, that they're looking for their identity and trying to resurrect their language, you know,
mm-hmm.
their dialect.
So, we're in France now, aren't we?
We are now officially in France.
Oh,
welcome
yeah.
to France, is it?
Yeah, everything does look different, you know, obviously street signs, but the architecture too.
Yeah, somehow it's more elegant, isn't it? More flair.
More je ne sais quoi.
More cliché.
Mm.
Hey, look, there's the old town wall of Visambur.
Ooh, very pretty. So, where are the good restaurants?
You know what? I know a really good pâtissier. Ooh. A really good pâtissier around the corner, Rébert. Shall we get... We've got to go to Jean-Yves. He's expecting us. Mm. We could take a few éclairs. They do very good éclairs.
What about the flammkuchen, though?
Well, he doesn't like that kind of thing.
He doesn't like flammkuchen. No. I'm not sure I want to talk to him.
Well, he comes from the Loire, so he comes from another part of France.
Ooh, can we have quiche Lorraine then?
You can ask him that.
I'll ask him.
But the quiche Lorraine comes from Lorraine, not the Loire.
Lorraine.
You're showing your deep French ignorance. I'll tell you what, okay, flammkuchen we can do later.
Cool.
Let's get some éclair. And he also, you know, he wants to give us a galette des rois.
Ooh.
You know what that is?
No. Tell me.
Galette des rois is like a French tradition. Mm. Yeah. So New Year, they produce this kind of pie.
Mm-hmm.
And you cut it, and there's like a sort of present inside.
Ooh,
and whoever finds that present puts a crown on their head and is king or queen.
Perfect. I want to be queen so I can decide that we're going to eat all the flammkuchen. Right. Let's go.
Alors, salut, Jean-Yves. Salut.
Salut, Orlando.
C'est...
Salut, Isabelle. Salut.
Très, très gentil que nous sommes ici avec toi.
Bien, et ton fils. C'est la même chose, c'est inversement. Je suis vraiment heureux qu'on s'intéresse à la poésie et surtout à la poésie qui peut-être aussi parfois change de côté de la frontière.
Oui, c'est ça. Did you understand that, Izzy?
So, you're also very interested in the poetry of border countries and,
yeah.
You know, the exchange between the two?
Yeah.
So we find ourselves here in Visambur on the edge between Germany and France, and we are meeting today Jean-Yves Doucet, fascinating person. And Jean-Yves, who has been living in Germany quite a long time, but also is obviously originally from the Loire in France, is going to tell us a little bit about his very, very interesting life. And about various other things, but yeah, so fantastic to be here. C'est très gentil. How did you end up?
Yeah, also ich habe ein großer Grund. Also es kommt von meiner Kindheit, wie bei manchen Leuten. Ja, das war meine Faszination für die Franzosen, die Dichter, die gern nach Deutschland geguckt haben. Also die Romantiker und die danach. Auch die Postromantiker, die Parnassien, also Baudelaire, Verlaine, Rimbaud, Victor Hugo, bien sûr, étaient tous Leute, die en Deutschland versiert waren, interessiert waren. Il y a aussi Stendhal, der auch einen deutschen Namen genommen hat, sagt auch, Deutschland, unsere Mutter an uns alle.
So, Jean-Yves saying, yeah, that basically all of these famous French poets, including people like Stendhal and other ones, they all saw Germany almost like
Romantica.
Yeah, they were all romantics and saw Germany as their natural.
Wagner war Auge Preis von Baudelaire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did you first start writing poems?
Mein erstes Gedicht habe ich 1973 geschrieben. In Februar in einer Höhle an der Nähe von Trier, also an der Mosel, also in Erang, im Höhle da, wo ich eine Woche lang da gewohnt habe.
You lived in a cave for
ja,
one week?
Es war noch sogar Schnee.
And it was snow.
War Schnee, ich habe da gelebt, das war eine Woche. Also, wenn man jung ist, ist das nicht so schlimm. Es war gut und da ich war allein und dann ist das so, es gab eine ich habe einen Vogel gehört, so eine Eule und diese Eule war der erste Objekt meiner Gedichte, also der Geschrei der Eule in die Nacht.
So you were in a snowy cave near Trier and you heard an owl cry and that inspired you to write your first poem.
Das war eine ein Prosa. Dann habe ich weiter in Berlin geschrieben, weil ich wohnte in Berlin. Ich habe natürlich, als war ich unterwegs, ich habe viel auch unterwegs geschrieben oder mindestens notiert und daraus später sehr viel unterwegs.
Do you find when you're moving, when you're moving, this is when ideas come?
Ja, beides, le mouvement permanent.
Yeah, so we take this as a first cue. You've chosen
three poems. Du hast, wir haben drei Gedichte ausgewählt.
Ja.
From recent ja. publications that you've written, Jean-Yves. Maybe we start with Antoine. Perhaps tell us a little bit about what it's about. Il s'agit de quoi?
Alors, dans Antoine, il y a forcément que c'est une opposition catégorique à la philosophie de Sartre.
Okay, it's a categorical opposition to Sartre's philosophy.
Well, I think my French is up to that.
Very good.
Alors, Sartre dit que l'enfer, c'est les autres.
Okay, l'enfer, c'est les autres.
Et moi, je dis que l'autre, c'est ma vie.
So, l'enfer, c'est les autres. Hell is the other person. Yeah, hell, yeah.
Und für mich, der andere ist mein Leben.
And genau. And Jean-Yves is saying the other person for me is
life as well.
Life so, like, too. So this is about the importance of duality and the, without the other, the one cannot exist. Basically.
En toi, je souhaite autant la fille que la mère, l'amante que la sœur, l'éloignement que la présence, et surtout l'inconnu par toi, l'inconnu en toi, sans cesse renouvelé, sans cesse amélioré, dans un tourbillon rappelant Cendrillon.
In you, I wish the mother and the daughter, the lover and the sister, the near and far, and above all, the unknown through you, the unknown in you, always anew, always improved in a whirlwind, like Cinderella.
This is also very interesting because I think this poem also in a way touches on our theme, which is borders, and a little bit about the other person over the hiver und river, yeah, mm-hmm. the person over the border and how we feel about them. And
a very good point is that, you know, to understand yourself, very often it helps to see someone else, to see yourself mirrored.
Yeah.
Also, wenn man sich selbst verstehen muss, braucht man eine andere Person, die das spiegelt, damit
ja.
man sieht, was bin ich.
Allein der Mensch kann nicht existieren. Mm-hmm.
So this is Antoine. What is the next one? So you've got another one lined up for us. What?
In dire.
Et la prochaine?
C'est la vieillesse.
La vieillesse. So age, basically.
Ja.
Age.
Alter, das werden wir alle. Oder wünschen wir uns. Wir wollen alle alt werden, gesund bleiben und mit gutem Gehirn.
Ja.
Das ist klar. Aber das Alter hat kleine Probleme mit sich. Das ist die Angst. Die Angst bleibt praktisch bei jedem Mensch. Wir haben nicht Angst vor dem Tod, aber wir haben Angst vor der Schmerzen.
So we're afraid of pain.
Ah, oder Abhängigkeit zu fallen.
Abhängigkeit, ja.
Wo man seine Würde verliert.
Yeah.
Das ist ein großer Prozess. Aber man kann damit spielen und das ist ein bisschen dieses Gedicht auf Französisch. Vieillesse. La vieillesse n'est pas la sagesse, mais le naufrage où l'être entraîné par le tourbillon du temps s'accroche désespérément à son passé, comme à une bouée de sauvetage. Heureux celui qui se sera choisi une partenaire ennuyante comme une douleur lancinante, morne comme un jour gris perpétuel, triste comme la prison à vie. Afin de s'être préparé au repos de l'au-delà dans les meilleures conditions.
Age. Age is not wisdom, rather a shipwreck where the person pulled about by the whirlwind of time hangs on anxiously to his past like a life buoy. Happy if you've made your choice. A partner, as boring as chronic pain, gloomy like a grey day, endless, sad, and lifelong. This is the perfect preparation for peace in the afterlife.
Wir haben auch ein Gedicht vorbereitet und die ist etwas ganz Besonderes, weil sie betrifft auch meine geografische Situation, meine kulturelle Situation und nicht zuletzt die Lebensart.
So before you read this, this is a piece of prose from Jean-Yves' book Vistoriette. And Vistoriette is basically a book of nice little anecdotes, poems, pieces of prose that have something to do with Wissembourg, which is this border town we are sitting in right now. So here we go. So this is called Ballade Transfrontalière, oui. The frontier ballade.
Une ballade. Sehr schön ist es auch das Wissembourg im Tal und das nächste Dorf ist auf dem Hügel. Es ist schon zwei Kontrast und Wissembourg ist eine schöne kleine Stadt. Also, it's really very schön.
It's a very pretty very place, pretty, isn't it? We've just found that out, haven't we?
Yeah. Ballade transfrontalière.
Cross-border ballad.
Si la nuit est belle, c'est qu'elle est le reflet de la vie.
If the night is beautiful, it's because it reflects life. Certainly with lots of black, but a little light too.
Entre la réflexion
well, I'm
et
there
la
between reflection
jouer
and
insomnia.
Playing with yourself is also part of the transgression. The Sandman's getting bored of the weekend and will stop by soon. My book suddenly weighs full of the weight of the world. And not having the necessary force, the arms fall back on themselves. The book on itself, it doesn't weigh much more than a pen. And so ends a weekend full of charm in a winery, where the sun enlivens happy flowers. This isn't a countryside which grins and bears it, but a region showing its rounded beauty. Hills, wineries, villages, colors sleeping from the rime to the mountain, where numerous sorrows are scattered. History has left in its wake touches of those men who built and destroyed their own way of living. The winery, such a living sign of union, is left, enlarged, embellished, honored, as if through a cult. Germany pins up two faces almost everywhere, often opposing each other and forceful when united. It's wine or beer and the two village churches which nourish the differences and visionaries. Based on a landscape disciplined and Romanized in the folds of its Hercynian forest. And as if to make a big universal pie, always mixed, ossified, flattened, beheaded, reunited, remodeled. In the end, it's a sort of ratatouille that shows this surprising Germany in its best light. Weekends are used to add a little salt. The weeks remain mostly without taste, with the same laborious smell everywhere.
Les weekends sont utilisés pour y ajouter un peu de sel. La semaine restant pour la plupart du temps sans saveur et partout la même odeur laborieuse.
Yeah, thank you very much. Izzy, could you understand any of that?
Very few.
Oui,
but there's some
bien,
things that I really like, like une grande tarte universelle.
Oui.
A big. I mean, we like talking about food.
We love talking about tarts, particularly. Yeah.
C'est impressionnant que à l'époque du Traité de Westphalie, Westphalische Friede, gab es praktisch so viele Länder in Deutschland wie Tage im Jahr. Glaube ich.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. And this is basically a nice kind of in praise of the region that we're in, mm-hmm. right? And because around here there's lots of wine field, wine growers, lots of different wine growers. We've got the forest. And if you go down, looking out of your window here, we can just about maybe go view over to the Black Forest on the right, and then on the left, if we were slightly higher, we'd be able to see the Rhine. So this is a really very varied area. What is it that you, now that you're in the autumn of your life, hast du das verstanden?
Non, pas trop.
What is it that you really appreciate about this area? Was magst du insbesondere cet endroit?
Cet endroit,
c'est quelque chose d'important.
Oui, 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 c'est important. Elva im Jahr 1980, wir sind davor, danach oder davor. Ich war beim Kudamm, ich habe Porträt gemalt und ich habe jemanden, der mein Orchester spielt und der war von ihr.
Ah, okay. So you met somebody who was in an orchestra, you painted a portrait. And he came from Wissembourg.
Ja, und wir sind mit der Zeit immer mehr oder weniger im Kontakt geblieben.
Okay.
Und habe mich geholfen. Und dann ich war mal in der Bretagne und Normandie nach der 2008, wo ich mit der Platte gemacht hatte. Ich habe alles verloren praktisch. Mein Atelier, meine Gemälde, meine Bibliothek.
So you lost everything. Yeah?
Diese Wirtschaftskrise.
In the economic crisis 2008. 2008.
Yeah. So you had a.
You had a gallery. Yeah.
Oui, oui.
In Moselle.
Oui.
You lost everything.
Alles in Bridel oder Moselle, Mittel Moselle. War sehr schön. Ich habe ein großes Atelier und so. Ich habe Gemälde gemacht und ich musste aufgeben, weil ich danach habe ich mal in einem kaputt Wohnwagen wie ein Penner gelebt. Ganzer Winter. Aber ich habe nur das verloren, ich habe nicht das Leben, ich habe mich keinen Schaden weiter. Das ist, alles, was man gemacht hat, kann auch verschwinden. Das ist auch nicht so schlimm. Das Sein ist das Wichtigste. Es hat mich nicht viel belastet, alles zu verlassen. Auf dem Moment, ja. Aber.
So that's kind of, I think, Jean-Yves' philosophy. Yeah? You can, you can lose everything, but as long as you are. That's the main
ich
thing,
ich
right?
kann wirklich morgen mit einem Teller und einem Schüssel leben. Voilà. Wollt ihr noch was wissen oder und was trinken noch?
Was trinken definitiv?
Also möchtest du einen Tee trinken oder Kaffee? Ich habe dich auf etwas vorbereitet.
So, Jean-Yves is taking something out of a paper bag. Jean-Yves, what is this? Qu'est-ce que c'est ça?
Ça s'appelle une galette des rois.
Une galette des rois.
Qui est faite spécialement pour l'épiphanie, alors le 6 janvier. Und das ist in ganz Frankreich verbreitet. Ist ein sehr, sehr schöner Kleinkuchen. Und da drin gibt es, früher gab es ein Mandel oder etwas Ähnliches. Heute ist es eine kleine Figurin. Und der, die bekommt, ist der König.
Wie ein bisschen weiter. Do you know this?
Yes, I've heard of it. Yes.
Und bekommt natürlich eine Krone.
Oh, so...
Und natürlich, das ist das Beste, wenn man es schafft, dass Kinder bekommen.
Yeah. I think so. So the person who gets the little present inside becomes king or queen.
Ja, das ist natürlich sehr, sehr schön. Das habe ich kenne ich von Kind aus. Also das haben wir alle als Kinder genossen.
So this is beautiful. So this is a lovely sort of pie, and it's what's it filled with?
Was ist darin? Also ist
normalerweise ist es Mandel oder Apfelkompott oder sowas.
Okay, so it's either almond or this one's almond, but you can also have apple.
Are we going to enjoy this later?
Oh,
I think
yes,
we are. Yeah.
Je suis content pour vous, dass wir morgen zusammen genossen werden. Wir sind Kinder, wir sind Freunde, was auf dem Tisch zu haben. Das ist verkehrt dazu.
Izzy, you get to wear the crown, I think.
Well, we have to see.
We have to eat the whole pie.
We have to eat the whole pie.
Thank you very much. Merci, merci bien. C'est pour nous.
Oui,
c'est pour partager.
Non, parce que c'est mieux pour les enfants.
Ah, c'est très
gentil. Wow, what an interesting guy.
Fascinating, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Izzy, you wanted to be queen?
Yeah. Should we get started on the galette before we go?
Hang on, I'll just open it up, take it out of its extensive wrapping. Right, and just break your flaky pastry. Hang on, break you off a piece. Here you go. Here you go.
Thank you. That's very flaky.
All right, now we both bite, and whoever loses a tooth basically becomes king or queen.
Ooh.
That's very nice, actually.
Oh, I got it.
Congratulations. What is it?
It's a little cat.
A little cat.
It's interesting.
Very interesting.
Very French. Un chat noir.
Un chat noir.
Un chat noir. Mm.
That's actually supposed to be good luck, I think.
Mm, excellent.
Lucky you. You're getting good luck for the year. No. Hang on. Here's a crown. Oh, you've got to put this on your head.
Perfect.
Now, you've got to keep that on now until we get back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? You know what I was thinking?
You were thinking, yes. What were you thinking about?
It would be kind of cool to check out the German border regions.
Yeah. Actually, how many countries have borders with Germany? I didn't ask you that question before.
God. Come on. All right. So, starting again. If we start with France and then we travel up, we've got Luxembourg, we've got Belgium, we've got the Netherlands, we've got Denmark, we've got Poland, we've got the Czech Republic, we've got Austria, and we've got Switzerland.
Very good. And what about Liechtenstein?
That doesn't border on Germany. That's sort of tucked away.
Very good. That was the trick question.
Oh, was it?
Yes, it was. Well, you know me. Come on. Yeah. Very good. And what is the capital of Liechtenstein?
Vaduz.
Very good.
Yeah, I knew that.
That is very impressive.
Well, you know, seeing as we've already checked out the UK, how about doing a round trip of Germany, checking out all these countries?
Yeah, but wouldn't that then entail doing an entire new season of the Poetry Pod?
Perhaps, but you know, it would be really interesting getting to know even more people like Jean-Yves and the poets and the border regions and the food.
Yeah, I mean, you've got me at food. I mean, this all sounds very promising, but...
Hey, Orlando, you know what?
Yeah, what? I've got a nasty sensation in my stomach. What is it?
You know what I was doing while you were driving here?
Looking a lot at your mobile phone.
Well, yes. My tablet, but
your tablet.
You know what I was doing?
No.
Well, listen to this.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God. No. How can this be even worse than the last one?
Oh, it's so good, isn't it?
I mean, you've taken... Oh, my God, you've taken Beethoven. So Holst wasn't good enough for you. You've got to desecrate Beethoven as well.
Modernise it.
Modernise
it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I can tell you, you definitely modernise it. He'd be rolling in his grave.
Come on, Orlando.
This is the ode to joy. It's not the ode to joy anymore.
It is very joyful.
Oh, God, it's a nightmare.
Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pod.
My name's Orlando.
And I'm Izzy.
And we are two people who like poetry.
Love poetry.
Love poetry. And we want to share that love...
with you.
In our second season, we'll be travelling along the German border to meet our neighbours.
And their poetry. And we'll try and understand what borders mean in our day and age.
Welcome to the Poetry Pod Season 2, Poetry on the Edge.
See, that wasn't too bad.
Oh, the music was very, very bad.
Oh, come on. We've got a new intro now. We've got to do season 2.
Oh, you had me at poems. Right, so where are we going then? North?
I guess north.
North?
We could go east. Well,
south is always warmer though, isn't it?
South is always warmer.
Should we go to Vaduz?
We could go to Vaduz, but that doesn't border on Germany.
No, that's true, but it is in Switzerland. It's
high.
Luxembourg?
Luxembourg. It's very small. I don't know anything about Luxembourg. It should be north of here. If we just keep going on the border, we get there eventually.
Turn in the car.